go that route. If you do have questions about UNIX in general, I'll try to answer them to the best of my ability, and if not, I can certainly get the answers.
I reiterate that. I mean, whenever I run my classes, I ask everybody to ask questions as we go through. So as we go through this, if you have questions as we're going through, let me know. Let either one of us know. All right, I start off and give some background on what exactly UNIX is and how it happened that Columbia got connected with them. You've heard a little bit about this already. Basically, you got in the spring of 1999, Columbia signed an agreement with UNIX.com to put business courses on the web. In addition to Columbia, there were other consortium members that came along quickly after. So who are the players? Basically, in the consortium, you have Columbia, and this is Columbia University, with these other universities, Carnegie Mellon, University of Chicago, Stanford, and London School of Economics. Basically, it's signed at the university level, but the business school, people in the dean's office, took a leading role in this, and really drove the relationship. Now, UNIX.com owns as a subsidiary Cardigan University, I was just finding out about it now, just got accredited in June of this year. And you can, there's blurbs on that and all these distinguished Nobel laureates on the advisory board and all this stuff. Basically, what we're trying to do though is the consortium members are going to provide content and help UNIX personnel to develop a course. I always say that I acted as liaison between the accounting department at Columbia and the people at UNIX. In fact, most of this stuff went through me. What I would do is I'd report to my colleagues back there and tell them what I was doing and stuff like this and update. But the first course, you got to understand, the first course we wanted to do in UNIX was a financial accounting course. Back in 1999, I signed up basically in July of 1999. Back in March of 1999, what, they had about 20 people, 30 people? And now they have something like 300, more than that. So it's really exploding. Back in March of 1999, there were no courses. Back in July of 1999, when I signed up, there were no courses. And now they're building a whole slew of courses, trying to not only build the courses, but to develop a process by which you develop and maintain not only the quality, but the vision and the aim. And it should be understood that there's a vision, there's an understanding about what's going on. Now, get to that as we go through and talk about how the course is developed.
One of the business issues that UNIX has faced is they decided very early on they wanted to grow big fast. So Mike and I have faced an interesting issue in that this accounting course, when we first started, we were guinea pig and building this thing first time through. And all through this, we've tried to take lessons and parse them out to new employees coming into UNIX and other professors at Columbia, and just any of the experience that we've had, and particularly some of the places we've had success and failure. So that's one point. And then another point maybe might be important is why would somebody like University of Chicago sign up with UNIX? From their standpoint, one of the reasons they signed is that they're sitting there saying that they want a presence around the world. The faculty in-house, working to obtain the faculty in-house to really build a worldwide presence at the level that they want. So one of the draws to UNIX was they saw this as a way to get the University of Chicago name out to some other schools at a worldwide level. And UNIX, maybe a little bit differently from some other programs like that Duke program, UNIX envisions a very large number of students going through their classes. Whereas I would say that Duke, for example, will have a distance education MBA, but it's still fairly exclusive in terms of the number of students that they're allowing into that program. UNEX has a broader mission, which is more the democratization of education. They view this being centered around the world.
Right. So what we wanted to do is create an introductory financial accounting course. Now, as Steve was saying, this thing was developing as we went through it. We started off, I was going to basically take a semester course from Columbia, use that material as a basis for the course. As we went through, yeah.
Are you using your commercial material?
All right. This is a good question. What I should do is go back and explain to people. Basically, Columbia has no undergraduate program. The only program they have is the MBA. And when we teach the MBA course, I'm sure you guys have experienced this, but it's even more exaggerated. The background in this course, the variance in the background is huge. I've had people in my course who are CPAs. I've had a lot of people who are financial analysts who have accounting backgrounds. And I've had ballet dancers and race car drivers and people who run museums. Okay, so the variance is really large. So what we have to do, and I'll come back to this more, but basically what we do is build a course that's designed for managers, not so much for accountants, but for managers to read the accounting, to understand the accounting. So when you talk about a book, we use a book. We use Schilling Law McGarren sometimes. Sometimes we use Stickney Wheel, but the book is complementary. The stuff that we teach out of the course has been developed almost solely in-house. So, for example, when I talk about the course here, we've got like 200 pages of lecture notes that have been developed around it. We have numerous court cases and stuff that was developed around it. And as you'll see in the course, well, we have brought some of that into the course as well as developed new stuff along the way. So the short answer is, yes, we use a book, but it is supplementary. It's not critical to the requirement course.
I think the way to think about all UNEX courses, not just the accounting course, all courses will have a textbook, and you should view it as a supplementary resource for the student. What you'll see when we go to the course itself is the student is much more in control of his or her learning path than in a classroom.
Are they tied to a particular book?
It'll vary from course to course, obviously.
Courses have, they specify a book and they give exercise a book. The accounting courses that we have. But I tell you, the way the courses are structured, you don't need the book. You don't need that particular book.
Yeah. It's very interesting because the students are in charge of where they go in this course. Okay, you'll see it's non-linear. So if you think about teaching in a classroom, that disappears in this environment. So some students will use a textbook very closely, and others will just set it aside and barely touch it. And the idea is that within the course itself, they can learn accounting.
All right. So who was? It was me. It was the UNEX development team. Part of the team was Steve. Part of the team was this guy named Garth Unwortham. And also in the team are what we call course developers, who were actually in charge of this specific course. I should back up. What we were originally going to do was take a semester course and put it on the web. What happened, though, in the process is, based on demographics and looking at what people really wanted, was we took the course and split it up into smaller parts. This made the sale, better, but it also was in line with a problem-based learning approach, which I'm going to talk about in a bit. But, so we went from a semester course to four littler courses, almost like executive education courses. So we had a developer for each of these. One of the things I want to mention up front, though, and we'll come back to this again, too. One of the things that made it particularly easier, particularly fluid in developing this course was that these guys were academics. Steve's working on his PhD. Don was working on a PhD in education. So, and there were PhDs throughout the UNEX corporation. much more so at the beginning than even now, but still even now. And part of the process of actually creating this course, you have to talk to these guys and explain your concerns. And it's very easy to talk to another academic and talk about how you worry about the students learning this, worry about the students being motivated and stuff like this. I think it's more difficult when you start to go outside the academic community to do this. And I think that most of the people who have dealt with online courses recognize that too. Okay. Timing. Let's go back. Timing. July 1999 versus today. There's a big difference. As I was saying earlier, July 1999, we had nothing in place. If we were going to build a course today, we would use a lot of the stuff that we learned over the last year and a half. Okay. It was kind of fun, but yeah, we do it differently. Okay, rewards. I think the first thing I should talk about is why we decided to do this, why I decided to do this, and why I think CBS or Columbia Business School decided to do it. You got to understand that I'm talking mostly personally now, but I'm sure that there were bigger considerations. Like when Steve talks about the University of Chicago extending its reach, that makes sense for me for Columbia too. I think that is what Columbia would say. That's certainly what they said repeatedly to the public. But I thought more for me. Why would I want to do it? First, I think it's true for many people, but I think that we believe that we have an ability to teach a county in a special way. We certainly believe that at Columbia. So that what we wanted to do was try and leverage some of the stuff that I was talking about. When David asked that question about the textbook, what we wanted to do was get some of that stuff out. And I think that if we can get it out and start reaching people with it, it would show that it represents an advantage. So that's one thing. And when we're talking about this, and this goes back to what Steve was saying earlier, UNEX offers potential for scale. Now, you give up something with this, and I'll talk about that a little bit later, too. You give up the control that was being mentioned earlier when Chuck was talking about it, when Bob was talking about it. You give up the control over the student's assessment and their grading, yet you're able to reach a lot more people with your content. Okay, so it's a very different kind of model. The other thing I wanted to do, and this was important for me, is to gain experience and learn a lot about the web-based course, the web-based teaching, because I figured that would be good for my own personal development. I also wanted, I've been teaching at Columbia for about 8 years now. What I wanted to do was just stop and construct a course. And it worked out even better because I teach financial core, managerial core, I taught evaluation course, I taught PhD courses over at Columbia. What I wanted to do, especially with the financial manager core, is try and put those things and combine them into a course that I wanted to put together. And this gave me an opportunity. As far as CBS goes, what I think CBS wants to do is they want to get in early on the web-based education. They wanted to do that because they think it's going to be a big thing. A lot of people saying it's a big thing. I believe it will be too. There's a lot of potential out there. And they wanted to do it in a way that leveraged their reputation with while actually enhancing rather than hurting. And that was a big deal with signing on with UNEX. I don't think that they would have signed on with a lot of people. I think they were persuaded to sign on with UNEX because they had some assurances that they would be able to maintain the reputation. Okay. What else? All right. So I talked about trying to transfer the Columbia expertise because we believe that there's certain things that we can teach pretty well. Also, we wanted to put together the knowledge and the skills of UNEX and Columbia and try and exploit some of the synergies that we could identify and find them. Now, to understand how to do this, I figured the best way to do it is talk about the differences. Talk about the differences and the similarities. First off, the similarities of the web and CBS courses. The similarities between the basic bricks and mortar course over at Columbia and the course that we're developing on the web is, first off, you've got a very practical approach. That's what I was talking about earlier. We try and teach managers much more than accountants. It's very important for these guys are going to be users of the accounting information. So it tends to be a slightly different focus than what you might have in an undergraduate accounting course. The cases, the notes, the other tools, all of those things are going to be, we're going to try and use those in the course, and we did. The differences, big differences, and this is stuff that I did not know when I first went in. The first big difference has got to be the control. And I use nonlinearity. What we're talking about is asynchronous kind of learning, so that I don't, when I normally teach my bricks and mortar course, I know exactly when the students are getting every bit of information that I'm doling out. Okay? I have control over it. I don't have that kind of control on a web course. They can go anywhere they want to. So I lose control over what they see and when they see it. So I had to cut back on some of the things that I did in class. I couldn't surprise them, or I had to surprise them in a different way. The other thing is motivation. When you're in a class, you can close the door and keep them in the class. Okay? You can't do that on the web. These guys can bounce off the web anytime they want, the way this course is constructed. So there's a certain amount of control that you give up, or rather, control that you have to use differently. And you have to motivate in a different way. The good side is that web-based learning allows you a different type of control and a different type of motivation. Next, the contact. The contact between student to instructor, student to student, and student to PC is going to be different than it was in class. I'm going to talk about this, but to give you a little bit of a taste, basically what happens with this is there's more student-to-student conversation, like through the chat rooms and written. There, you lose the face-to-face, there's no question about that. But there is a certain amount, there's a certain amount of communication that goes on that doesn't go on in the bricks and mortar. That's also true for the student, the instructor, and depending on the course, the student and the PC. Yeah.
Do you think, I'm a little skeptical about that, especially in a situation like Columbia where there are study groups, where everybody meets in the same cafeteria and talk.
I agree. Now, I should step back. When I say that there is more, what I mean is there's different. I don't think you will ever replace the on-campus kind of interaction that we get person to person with our students. I don't think you can do that on the web. However, what you do get on the web is you are able to require the students to interact. You can, based on some of the software that I'll talk about later, but some of the software, you can actually see if a student is not talking to any of the other students. And I know in my class, it's very hard for me to ensure that they actually participate. Even if I put them in groups, it's hard to get that interaction. So,
I might interject that Dan's going to talk this afternoon at Illinois Experience. Communication between students and instructors is up to 50% during the asynchronous. So it happens.
And remember that although this communication is different, it's also asynchronous. Okay, so what does that mean? Something as simple as, you know, we can track across classes all of the good questions the students ask. Okay? We can write them down. We can respond to them with well-written answers and create an FAQ section. Many students, when you talk about the non-linearity, we do a lot of testing with students on these courses. This accounting course has seen a lot of people go through where we gather data. And you'll see that one of the things that many students do is, in lieu of going to read chapter 1 on the first day of class, they'll go to a Q section and read about what every other student has said about the class, and that in and of itself is education for many of these students. So if you count that as communication, it really changes the idea a little bit from what you see in a brick and mortar situation. It's an interesting way.
I recently did a course, and you're exactly right, you can tell me to watch all of it, but at the end of the first week, I was really paying attention because it was so much work that I had to do, I was a graduate of class. But there were over 1,000 messages to parents answering projects or together to teamwork projects and things like that. And in addition to that, there were individual messages from the student, and probably had more interaction with the students.
It actually raises an interesting question, which is you have a lot of communication, and it's all sort of archived, and we're trying to address that situation now with our instructors. And our instructors, when they deliver class, will have the ability to go in and parse out, delete, and combine threaded discussion comments, so you can keep it down to a tolerable
level. There's probably those too, but Blackboard is neat that way, and so on. They'll thread it for you. In other words, the threads are automatic. You said that thread.
Yeah, but you guys got to realize that at least a number of people do not believe that, although this communication is possible, it's not like it's more. Because there's other communication, I think, that you get when you're on campus that you can't get in the web-based course. So that it's a different kind of communication. I think that's the important thing. Evaluation and assessment, these things are going to be critical. Now, you've got to understand, be very frank about this, these are basically like executive education courses at this point. And when I teach executive education as well, you know, grade. I don't have to worry about grading. I always have to worry about learning, but I don't have to worry about grading so much on these courses. What we're going to have to do, though, is develop the grading for this. And insofar as Columbia's reputation is on the line, Columbia is going to have to worry about how the grading is done, how the assessment is done, and basically whether these guys are learning. And this is something that, this is like a hurdle that's going to be crossed more so in the future than it is right now.
Okay.
I got a question.
Yeah.
Back on that.
Yeah. I would defer that to Steve because he's seen more of the action.
Each generation, they're getting way ahead of us.
Yes, of all kinds. And when we're talking about here about student PC interaction, there are a couple points to say. One is if you put a textbook online, that will not be a successful strategy. Okay? Not to read on the computer screen. So what you want to do is, if you have exercises where they're just reading through and reading an answer or something, that also will not be very successful. So when we're talking about interactivity, you have to think about maybe a traditional accounting question where, you know, there's interaction between the questions that you're asking and what the student is responding. You saw a little bit of that in the demo with Chuck, where it was like questions to question answer is one approach. And so that entails at least two papers, but not much more. So as it turns out, in front of these classes, there's another class where you can learn how to use the UNEX environment. And it seems to be friendly enough that many people without much in the way of computer skills have done fairly well.
Plus, this speech recognition software is really working now. You saw it demo a little bit this morning. It's going to be on the premiere and you'll have different people that are going to be doing this, even on your telephone. It's getting so good. You've got Dragon naturally speaking. Really good. You got the biggest version?
Yeah.
Well, they're trained in YouTube, Dan. Just we can't understand.
Yeah.
You say that the evaluation of students that you're doing that.
I think, yes.
Okay, so yeah. If so, I mean, how is there any problem for your structural design?
Yeah, yeah. But understand that the course has barely been worked out.
Yeah.
I mean, what we're doing is we're really at the forefront of developing this course.
We had our first student.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is that we've developed a pattern for grading. And what I'm worried about is going forward, we're going to have to grade and assess on a much broader scale. And that it's not to say that we haven't developed a plan for grading and assessment, it's that what I personally would say that Columbia has to worry about going forward is making sure that this grading and assessment meets their criteria. Okay? And this is and it's something we're going to talk about in the later slides too, because doing the grading is going to be critical in actually making this course as good as we think it could be.
One thing to keep in mind too is how you grade and assess is going to be an effect on your learning. Because once you set the parameters of the grade, they change the learning and the whole
always.
So they interact, you just can't do it.
Right. We set up in these classes something we call rubrics. That's just the way that we're going to grade. We're going to grade against these criteria. Okay? So the student's well aware of that, and the instructor will come along and reinforce that early in the course. Okay, this is how we're going to grade. What we're doing is we're building a software system behind that, so that when a student turns something in, or when they're asking the questions, okay, we're going to be able to look at those questions and bring in some additional material. So the idea of assessment isn't just, here you've got a B. It's, you've got a B, but we notice these five things, which is, I think you might be interested in this over here. You seem to be very interested in this aspect of the course, so try this, and this. Over here, you might want to work yourself a little bit more, so here's this, and this. In other words, the assessment becomes another way of learning. And then when we get to the point where we're offering this as an MBA, one of the critical issues is maybe we actually offer a very traditional exam to proctor. Because you have to know who's on the other side of the computer, right? Okay? Anybody can log in. You have to know this. And so we're taking steps within the patients that are interested in talking with UNEX to set that up. And even outside of that, setting up a situation where we can proctor exams around the world.
And you know,
it's an interesting issue.
You know, what kind of feedback do you get?
All right. You guys are jumping the gun. Jumping the gun with rubrics, jumping the gun with teaching, because I wanted to get into this. Let me say it very, very quickly that the structure on the Unix course is going to be different than the structure you've been hearing about up to this point. It is a different kind of scale. I am not the teacher on this course. When we talk about teachers or instructors, that's not me. What it will be is people that Unix is going to hire and train. And this is another area that I want to talk about that will be critical making the quality of the course. What we've done is develop the content and develop the course. The next step will involve instruction and grading and assessment. And this is points that have been addressed. There's a plan out there, but it hasn't succeeded yet because the courses aren't out there yet. But TBC, to be continued, we're going to get to this. All right, we'll come back. All right. First thing, got a few points here. First thing I wanted to stress is the material, just like Steve said, you can't take the material out of, can't take a book, textbook and put it on the web, nor can we take the material that we have in our bricks and mortar course and just put it on web. There were things, that's why I used the term re-engineer. Steve says that content is a verb, it's not a noun. That's the point. The point is that when you put this up on it, you've got to be cognizant of the fact that the material just can't transfer over.
How does it change? Well, there's a different format. There was certainly a different format in here. I was taking a semester course and breaking it up into four beds. There's even more so with the UNEX because they have problem-based learning approach, which I'm going to talk about too. Also, it had different coverage. What I was doing was I was pulling in some financial as well as some managerial, putting it in the courses together. But it also had a different kind of design, and that goes back to the discretionary pace or the asynchronous learning, the fact that this is all asynchronous learning. Enhance the tools. We also have certain tools. What we do, and this goes back to, again, different type of emphasis on the teaching, we emphasize an ability to read the financials and not generate all of the entries. So that what we want them to do is be able to understand what's going on and ask intelligent questions of their accounting department. To emphasize this approach, a worksheet approach, what we call the accounting box. We have them draw a box and we show how cash flow is related to wealth flows, and the only reason we have accounting is to make that link or connection between these things. And we bound that into it. Now, the good thing about this course is it allows us to use that to a better advantage. It actually allows us to enhance the use of this picture, or use of this visual approach. When I draw the box on the board, it looks lousy, but UNEX can make it look better and put it together in a way that is consistent all the way through. What do they do? Problem-based learning is the first aspect. Problem-based learning is, as I'm sure most people have heard about, if you haven't, basically what it is, I give you a real brief overview from my perspective. This is the way I understand it. If I'm teaching, I always use Detroit. I grew up in Detroit, so I always use Detroit. If I'm teaching auto mechanics, if I want to teach about an internal combustion engine, I give a description of the internal combustion engine. I start describing what a piston is, what a carburetor is, things like that. Project-based learning approach doesn't do that. What it does is it says you're driving across the desert, your carburetor. What do you do? And from there, it's sort of like a discovery approach. Well, that's what they're using here. And that's what goes into all these courses. In addition to that, and we've talked a little bit about this, you got instruction, content, and testing. All of these are going to be critical. Talk more in detail about the instruction and content as well as the testing. I want to go into exactly how much testing gets done and why. And when I say testing, I don't mean testing the students, I mean testing the course and getting feedback in the course development. What else? Oh, all the web and multimedia technology. This, all the bells and whistles that spiff it up. These are the things that I think UNEX brings to it. All right. So, what about the PBL? The PBL approach, or the problem-based learning approach, basically takes the end of the course and puts it to the front, just like what I said, driving across the desert and bring it. That's normally what you would find at the end of a traditional course. We bring it up to the front. We call this a scenario. You get the student involved in it, pulled into it, okay? Sort of like they're in a story or a detective novel that they have to solve. Then we provide tasks or strategies. Probably strategy is a better word, because what it is not something specific you have to do, but it's more like a direction. What you might want to do, so for example, in one of our courses, assessing profitability, we had the guy question about whether the acquisition of a subsidiary would be a good idea. How do you figure this out? Well, you might want to try and read the financial statement. Just read it. And then you give what are called deliverables, meaning you give little memos. We get more specific about this, but basically the overall strategies give more direction than specific, like problems in a workbook. Now, we also have problems in a workbook that we direct them to, but this is a lot less specific than that. All right, What about the collaboration? Here, the coverage of the material was the same as we had in the court, in bricks and mortar courts. Basically, a lot of the coverage was directed by me, or the people at Columbia. But, like I said, it was re-engineered, and it was re-engineered with the idea that the pace was going to be discretionary. They could get to go at it from many different levels. What else? Oh. The animation and interactive items. So basically, they created the technology people at UNEX created the actual videos, the actual media objects. But they didn't just create it on their own. What happened was, and this goes into how this process went about, we started off, I met with Don and Steve and some people and started talking about what the general idea for each of these courses would be. And we started off by that so that they actually outlined what was called a course brief that hit on the big items like the outcomes and the objectives of the courses. Then, as we went along, I explained themes. We hashed out themes that would run through the course, one of these being like the accounting box. Then, based on that, and based on materials that I supplied, the written materials, lecture notes, they would develop animations and the interactive items, that interactive exercises for the students that stressed certain points that were consistent with the overall theme. We spent more time up front putting this stuff together and talking about it before we ever got into actually doing anything specific. And this was critical for making sure that the courses held together in an appropriate fashion. Yeah?
One, give you an idea of an interactive piece that I'm still working on. It's not in the course. Throughout these courses, we want students to look at any course. And what I'd like to do, and working on back home, is an interactive piece where a student can pull up, for example, Dell Computer Company's annual report. And then what I've done is gone completely through that and write a whole series of questions and comments and things to think about so that what a student will see as they go through, say, the balance sheet, is they can run their mouse over anything and up an opportunity to click and see some comments that I've made and Mike has made about this annual report. And they can spend as much or as little time there as they want. And then hopefully as time goes forward, and we'll build up an index of these. There'll be 7 or 8 or 9 of them. And students will spend, some students will spend a great deal of time there. Some students will go specifically to something that's been bothering them. Okay? And some students will spend less time there. But the point is that relative to a classroom, and usually a classroom will do this, but we've got an hour or an hour and a half, and everybody has to be at the same spot in terms of their level of understanding. And here what we're trying to do is let them spend as much time as they want and also give them different levels of understanding and direction as to where to go if they find something interesting. So the accounts receivable box might include a description or actually a link, hopefully to some material about accounts receivable or a reference to the textbook. And many students will go down that path, other students will not. We talk about this non-linearity, that's something we're trying to build in the next version.
Yeah. And the contact we talked about, we actually talked about a little bit earlier, and it occurs in most of the web course, I think, that you have contact with the student that is not normally available when you're teaching in the bricks and mortar course. And basically, Cardian has software on this. I suppose other places have software on this. I've seen some of the Cardian software, and it's really spiffy. You know, nice pictures for the kind of content, as well as trying to process the information. Okay, structure of the product. What do we got? We got four parts of almost all of these courses. You got introductory materials. The introductory materials are very similar across the course. You know, they have one that talks about cardiac forces in general, and then an introductory, basically, blurb on, I don't know what you want to call it, maybe a link where you go down to a different web page. You got one on the courses in general, which is similar, and then you got another one on a specific course. Project reference material. This is the stuff that you need, like the financial statements. We always work off of real financial statements, or in some of the courses, basically financial statements that are pretty real. In MBA class, we almost always work off of the real stuff. Now, the big things are, the resource modules are basically the stuff that was patterned off of the lectures that we had at Columbia. Those are broken up into much smaller modules, but that's basically what it is. What is key here is the project scenarios and strategies. The scenarios I talked about before is like an overall mega project for that course. The scenario, the strategies or tasks are the smaller requirements are really given to the students on how to accomplish the overall scenario. We will have a detailed walkthrough at the end when we go through the demo. So we're going to come back to these and I'll point these out specifically. But this is the blurb. This is where I think that the advantages really came out of this course. What I would say is it allowed us to take some of the stuff we do at Columbia, re-engineer it and put it on the web. And insofar as it's good stuff to begin with, hopefully it's good stuff at the end. The other things were the PBL approach, and I think UNEX also has an enhanced control over the content. So they understand how the students interact, got pretty good handle on how the content is going. But really, I think that a good part of this is just personally, and not connected to this, personally, what I think is especially good about the UNEX contact with us was, like I said earlier, that they had a very good understanding of what my needs were. So when I talk about something not up to snuff or not working the way I wanted to, they understand what I'm talking about as far as contact with the students, because a lot of the people have been in the classroom. They know. Okay. What else? Oh, controlling the quality. First off, generating the product. To make it a good product, you really do have to re-engineer it the way I've talked about before. Okay? You can't just slap it on the web. But the second thing is, they test it. And they test it a lot. And we kind of kid about it because when they, I was talking last night, it was like driving a car without a body on it. You know? They put people in the car before our course was half built. They had people in there testing big picture items. Okay? They called it alpha testing, then they went into beta testing, and they tested repeatedly on these products. My understanding is they're going to continue to test on it.
UNEX has a growing user experience department, and you know, the interaction of the human, us, and the computer is something that's very well known, particularly in California. And so we brought in some people that help us with that. And they conduct all the testing. So when you talk about testing this accounting course, it's not me, okay? I have no control over that. It's handed over to another department. They're trying to do something independent. The students that they bring in, they fit what they think is the profile of the student that we'll see. And we see things that are very, very interesting in terms of designing and writing a course. For example, non-linearity issue. Okay? Say, okay, I get that. But it has a profound impact on how you write material. Because you have to remember that many of these students will come in, and because they can go anywhere, anytime, they will go through the scenario and the strategies. Okay? So say they get to the last task or strategy. Okay, that's essentially the end of the course. And then they start asking the instructor questions. Okay. Well, they've not been through the course yet, so the questions that they're asking are not the same questions they would hours later, get things like that. And what that says is you need to write this content so that when they come back, the content fits those needs in a very nonlinear fashion. So essentially, you end up maybe writing the same idea in several different directions. We had a professor in from Stanford, and he was commenting, well, you've already said that, okay, but you said it over here a different way. And I said, yes. You know, we talked about, in that case, it was a time value and money issue. And we talked about it in three or four or five different ways at different points in the class, knowing the students had come back through and seeing how the way they were going through the course. So this testing has a very important benefit in terms of the work that Mike and I have done in terms of writing the course.
Right. It's also going back to the contact. When Dora was talking about how there was contact between the students and with the professor, also these software packages, at least the one at Cardian, allows you to see whether these guys have actually been in the different modules. So, for example, and we'll go into it. If they have a question about articulation of the financial statement, I could look, or the instructor could look and say, well, you're having a problem with this task. Why don't you go into that module and read about it? You know, so in this, and I know I can't do that. I can guess when I'm in bricks and mortar, but I don't have that kind of knowledge, data, to be able to make that assessment.
Actually, I think hopefully in our next version, sometime next year, we're going to semi-automate that. In other words, the way I like to think about it is the instructor will have a dashboard over here. So a student asks a question, and there's a program over here that's keeping track of everything that student's done, where they've been, the types of questions that they've asked. And we'll start making suggestions to the instructor, okay, about where they need to fill in gaps and how to do it. And the instructor will have the ability completely ignore that, which I think they will on many occasions, just as so. The instructor may bring in their own materials. Great, we'll allow that. Or some combination where the instructor can add some other comments in. And so when we talk about assessment and, you know, delivering things to the instructor, we're talking about continuing to try and help the student learn. That's some intricate software, so it'll be a little while before that's there, but that initiative's on the way. We've given up that control. In these classes and all the next classes, I think it's a very fair statement to say that the student is in control. And the role of the instructor or professor is very much one of I like to describe it as a guide. In other words, metaphorically, instead of standing up here saying today's lecture is, I'm going to walk to the back of the room, give every student the ability to take control of the learning process, and I'm going to help them like crazy by looking over their shoulder as a guide, okay? And I may point to some things and say, you really should go do this. That may be more of a control statement, or I may come back and give some suggestions for things you like, some suggestions for things you see that not like. You really got to capture this. Things that are ignoring over here, because later on they become important in this way.
You could add in challenge things so that you have to know this before you go here. That's common in academics.
And you certainly could. We have not done that at this point.
I think this brings up a good point that was discussed earlier, and that is with the web-based learning, you have a reassessment of content. So that you really take a look at how people are learning, Chuck was saying earlier. I think that's true. I think that this has been a learning experience for me, because this has forced me to rethink about what I do in bricks and mortar courses, as well as because of the way these guys approach their courses and the problem-based learning.
I just wondered, are you going to talk about the academics about the course?
calmly so they can hear.
Okay. I'm wondering about the economics of this. What are the incentives for a person to develop a course like this? The person who's an instructor in the course?
Sure. I can talk about my incentives. I don't know that I feel comfortable talking about UNEX's incentives or Columbia Business School in general. I can tell you about my incentives to develop the course, and I can tell you what I think their incentives might be. You understand that? My incentive to developing the course I talked about earlier, basically, this gives me a chance. I like my financial manager. I like my manager. I think we do it well. I think we do it a little bit different. This offers me an opportunity not to get to 200 students per semester, but like 2,000 or 20,000. So it really offers me an impact as a scholar and as an educator to pass that out. Now, as far as the economics go, when you talk about the economics, what these guys are thinking about is scale. They're trying to reach 20,000 people, I think. And that's the way, when Columbia thinks about it, when professors think about it, that's what they're thinking. Now, who gets paid that money? I don't know how much of it is going to UMass, how much of it is going to Columbia. I would imagine Columbia would, and Chicago and all these others are going to benefit from it too. But to what extent? I'm not sure.
Are you getting
No. No. Nice specific question. No, nobody, as far as I know, nobody in the consortium who's working through the consortium is getting a royalty on this.
Do you know differently?
That's correct.
Right.
Do you need a major?
Huh?
Do you need a major?
You bet I do.
You bet
I do. I think we all do.
Columbia's got a lot of cash.
Columbia should
be. That's what I understand. By the way, Columbia uses this money heavily to recycle. That's how they get into Fathom and some of these past successes.
Basically,
so this is a tremendous growing
company. Basically, I got teaching. So I got, this is supposed to take 2 years. I got my teaching prep in hand 2 years. So it's basically about a year's worth of teaching that went into this course.
Columbia.
My understanding, my spin on this, these are great questions. My spin on this is as follows. When you guys develop a course, does the university get access to that material? What do you guys do when you develop a course? Say you put a case into your financial accounting course, you share it with the college generally, right? You don't license them. By and large, that's what we do at Columbia. If I develop a course, I put it into my course, somebody who's teaching that class with me gets it too. When they leave, they take it with them. Okay? Right. That's their property, even though I developed it. And that's what happens with Columbia, right? Or with your school. Normally, your school gets the courses that, the lecture materials and stuff that you develop for your course. That's the way I understand this, which is very different than a textbook. Okay.
My reading of Columbia is that those good questions is that there are a handful of superstars in our industry, particularly in the executive education market, who are driving deals where they get royalties or even equity in some e-learning companies, but that is increasingly exceptional and not going to the school and then the school and the
faculty. Bob put that up there, right? You had some of those guys. But by and large, I know a lot of people who are doing these courses at Columbia now, like three or four of them. My understanding is they're getting normally some teaching time or getting paid the equivalent of a course that they're doing. Not the right.
All this stuff, sustainable is this long term. You can't do it once. These things are going to be changed every year.
Right.
Unless schools basically appoint the faculty member to take care of this.
Right.
Initially, I can see the excitement, but I'm going to that one or 2 years.
Yeah.
And then you can draw up and say, why do I spend my weekend doing this?
But you know, you're doing it for yourself. They're doing it for the school, and the school wants to keep it going because it benefits them. They'll make deals. Columbia will keep making deals for something that's beneficial. I mean, they're in control.
The spirit of sell. Okay? So I think there's incentive, certainly at Columbia's dean's office, to view this as a school-wide project. And it's very much turning out to be that. Mike was the very first, but there are other professors there that are coming along.
I just wondered what you thought of Mike, how this course would be before that.
You know, I kind of think it will be redone on a continual basis.
I guess.
And that's one of the
real
advantages. Yeah. What an advantage. But, you know, you guys got to understand, from my standpoint, I'm the guy on human capital. I want to be able to develop skills. So I see this as a great opportunity because I've gone through the process and I know better about the problems and some of the advantages that I didn't know before. Right?
I very much view these classes as alive. It's a web-based situation. The expectations are that these classes will be relatively current and alive. And so I think we'll continuously be working on the next version of this class. In other words, this class is, it's archived and sitting here today, but we immediately copy it and we start working on some new things for the next version. Very much like software development. Okay? Where as soon as you got one out, you're working on the next.
Question.
I really got a question about process, but since we're talking about incentives, I have a question about incentives.
All right.
Since Columbia and these other institutions are in a consortium with a for-profit institution, what's the view of Columbia on conflicts of interest? Are you now able to take the skills that you developed and sell your next course to the highest bidder, or will Columbia view that as a conflict of interest?
You mean
I can see. What this world has done is that where schools used to be able to say, well, if you're teaching for us, you can't go and teach for another profit institution without our permission, nonprofit institution without our permission, that's double dipping. But now that the fact that we're working with for-profit institutions, would they allow you to go to work with Jones International University?
And I'm not sure about this. But my understanding of the situation at Columbia was that there was a limit to outside consulting that you could do.
Right.
There's always been.
Right.
Right? And they give something like 10 days. I don't know what, you know. You guys know that enforcing this stuff is questionable, you know. It's just get carried away.
My point is the market going to correct this? Is the market going to decide? Is Columbia going to let the market decide whether you get a flat fee or whether you get royalties or how much by being able to vote with your feet?
Yeah, I think that they will. But on the other hand, I don't think that you will see that most of these guys can stand away from their universities. The university is a relatively nice job. I don't think that these guys are going to build. There's going to be very few people who can make an outside position. Just based on their own reputation.
They won't say focus. It's a little bit like a Harvard case, I think. Well, if you're a Harvard professor and you write a Harvard case, it's Harvard's case. You move to another university, your students still have to buy it from Harvard. And I kind of think a lot of materials they develop will be like that. Now, that doesn't prevent him from developing something similar, just like a Harvard professor can go to Yale and develop a case on students based costing. It isn't the same case, but it's similar. And nothing prevents that. You just got to start from scratch.
All right, we wanted to get to the demo. We got about 10 minutes left. A lot of this stuff we've already talked about. We talked about results on testing and exactly how we use them. When I'm talking about testing here, I'm not talking about testing the students. I'm talking about testing the process of creating the course and the course itself. As far as exit interviews go, on the back, I put down some exit interviews. Now, part of the problem is that...
I'm going to give you another 15 minutes after lunch, sometime after lunch, I'm not sure what part.
Okay.
Do you want to do the demos in that 15 minutes, or...
You want to try to do that?
I think so. I think I'd...
All right.
My preference is...
We'll have the demos, but we may wait till later, so he doesn't have to get some room.
Cool. Yeah, we can give you the demos, and we can spend 5 minutes or 15 minutes on it, depending on what you want to see. As far as the quality control, this, from my standpoint, this was very, very important to make sure that these guys were actually learning. We got some quotes on the back of the handout that on student reaction,
client reaction, client is basically, what they did was they went into, I don't know, GE, and they showed the course, and this is the people who actually bought the course, their reaction, as well as one of the instructors, when they were talking about their reaction to working through on the instruction of the course. Also, what I would say is, this is up to this point. Up to this point, it looks pretty good. It's very positive. Then we talk about going forward. And this goes into questions that we were raising about instruction. And this goes back to when David asked, do we have a plan for the grading? Do we have a plan for the instruction? We got a plan for it. But this, in my mind, is what Columbia should be worried about. They have to make sure that UNEX finds instructors who are open-minded, who are diligent, who are well-trained, but also are going to put in the effort. So they got to motivate these guys to do that. And then they got to train them and explain to them how the course works. In addition to that, you got the assessment. My mind, Columbia is, it's going to be critical for Columbia reputation, as well as all these schools' reputations, any school's reputation, that people actually learn from this. And that you don't grade just pass guys, okay? So your grading is very effective. And this is another point that comes up. It's kind of interesting in my view. In my view, I always thought from a pedagogical standpoint, it would be kind of nice to divorce the teaching from the grading. Because I always get this when I'm in class, that these people come up and say, is this going to be on the exam? You know, I worked so hard on this, all this stuff. And you want to really try and divorce those things. It's sort of like, you know, when I was at the LSC, and when I was over there, they had year-long exams where whoever taught you helped to write the exam, but your grading was really divorced from the teacher. And this offers that kind of opportunity. It also offers the opportunity to use some of the rubrics that we were talking about earlier, that Steve was talking about earlier, so that you have actually more material, more data that you can use to direct the learning. One of the things about this is that, and this was on the previous slide, Columbia maintains a review. There is going to be a review board set up by the consortium partner, so Chicago, Carnegie Mellon, Stanford, and Columbia, are going to have faculty on a review that oversees these courses, even though they're Carnegie courses. That's my understanding. In this way, anything that has Columbia's name on it is going to have to pass Columbia review. It'll be very critical that these guys take this seriously, but you know, it's a big deal. Branding is a big deal. So I imagine they will. That Columbia faculty will take this very seriously. All right. Got these three. Looking in hindsight, what were the critical factors? I think you got to recognize the need for re-engineering the course. You can't just go in and lay it out. You got different length and different focus. You especially have a different focus here at UMass. I think that the problem-based learning approach offers a lot of opportunities. I think it's very, we'll probably get more of this when you talk with, when Tony gives his presentation in the afternoon. But I think the whole problem-based learning approach offers opportunities, especially in our business, but especially with the graduates in the upper level. The next thing, it's hard for me to overemphasize this, I think. We appreciate differing viewpoints because these guys had a background in academics. And working with academics is very important to help you make these projects go. The main operating problems I see were the contact and the motivation. And I think that generally speaking, maybe you guys can type in, but generally speaking, I think one of the difficulties you've got to address with a web-based course is the whole notion of the contact you have. To ensure that people don't feel left out, you got to contact them, and you got to motivate them. All right. Looking to the future. Oh, this stuff is great.
what I want to do. Let me go through it. What I want to do is, we got current UNX courses that we want to get done, but we got new courses coming on. Okay? That's all well and good. What I really want to do is bring the success back home. I'm employed by Columbia, always have been. I want to bring this stuff back home, back into my classroom. I want to bring it into the regular MBA. I'll probably be teaching the EMBAs next year in the executive education. This stuff offers a lot of potential for bringing them back home. But you can't just take these courses and use them in your course. They got to be modified. You got to think about how we use them. And I don't know what the answer to that is. The other thing is that we're not using just the accounting courses. Any course that UNX develops in connection with the consortium, we should be able to use. So my finance colleagues should be able to use finance courses taught by University of Chicago. Along the lines of Bob was talking about with some of the alliances, cross-feeding courses. We should be able to do that with these courses developed by UNX. And the last thing is, there's real big personal return that I was talking about earlier that I have. I actually, and this goes back to what's been discussed earlier about a new pedagogy, it forces you to stop and think about what you're trying to achieve when you do these courses. And I don't know that I got a whole lot of answers, but it did sort of force me to start asking these questions. And it was fun to do that. It was fun working with these guys and being exposed to a different kind of approach. All right. That's exactly right. What I was going to say.
What we'll do is, I'm going to 2018 money. I'm going to give them time when it's going to be after you, and then we'll just delegate a little more questions.
Basically, what would happen with the Carnegie course is you would enter a web page that is the project guide. You'll notice on the left hand side you have four. Here you go. Kind of up a little bit. Up over on the left hand side, you got the introductory material. Then next, you have the project, the desert project, which has the scenarios and the tasks that I was talking about earlier. Next, you have the reference tools. All of these are things like then down below you have the learning resources and all that stuff down below. It's kind of hard to see on the screen because it's cutting it off, but those are basically like lecture notes. They were based on the lecture notes that I talked about. So, basically you come here and you can point at these different areas and it sort of lights it up over there. So, what I think that first thing you would do, if you've never been on a course, and over in the upper left-hand corner, it has about 30 courses on it. So what I did when I first got on this stuff was, I went over to the left and clicked on what's a Cardian course. And then it gives all the links for how to start the course and stuff. You go further down, take a little bit down. What do we want to talk about here? How do you start the course? Where's the syllabus? How's the course interface? All of this kind of stuff. This tells you, and this is the same for all the courses, so that this structure, the way it's set up right here with all the four categories on the left-hand side and how to access those, that's going to be kind of standard for all the courses. What else do we want to say? Questions?
Just HTML.
Pardon?
This is an HTML.
This will be, when I'm playing with this, they give me this is all at UNIX. They have a server, and they give me an access, a URL to get on it, and a password and stuff, while I'm working on this. Basically, I tell you what happened with me is, after we had the discussions, these had to go back to Chicago. And I would type up my lecture notes in a way that fit the courses that we developed. This, you'll notice this is assessing the quality of accounting information. This was the third course that we developed. The way it worked was I would write up the lecture notes, send it to them, they put it in, they create the scenarios and the task. Why don't we go to about this course? All right, now about this course, you set up the learning outcomes and you have the topics telling you what sort of what the takeaways for this course are going to be. What else? This will be the same kind of outline for each of the courses, but of course it will be different for each of the courses. The first one that we just saw would basically be the same for each course. All right, this stuff you probably wouldn't look at. If you've seen other Carnegie courses, you wouldn't go to this. The first thing you do is start playing games. Playing games means go back to the project guide. Playing games means you go into the course. So let's notice, just go down. As it goes down, it highlights the different tasks. And the way to do the actually accomplish the project is to start with the scenario.
You said one course. How long will it take?
All right. Here's the deal with that. Basically, I signed up to do one course, which meant one semester course. As we got into it, we changed it to four courses. So I did four courses.
These four full courses? Or
no, these are basically the semester course chopped up into four mini courses. They put the courses together into a course suite. So the course suite amounts to a semester course. This, what they were talking about is in the range of 75 hours, something like that, for a course, which is approximately, I would say, about half what you would have in a bricks and mortar course.
Yeah.
75 hours.
The reason that we did that was we were talking with corporations about what we were doing, and one thing that consistently came out is that most of the people in charge of this sort of thing at these corporations didn't believe that their employees would stay with the course if it was on the computer for 100 hours. And they felt that something on the order of 5 weeks, 5 hours a week, 6-7 hours a week was a very realistic number. And so we came back and designed our courses such that this thing that you're looking at right now, assessing the quality of accounting information, takes students from beginning to end in terms of student time about 20 to 25 hours. Now there's a distribution around that because students have different skills coming in. And ironically, some students spend longer at it because they like it. But the idea is that on average about 20 to 25 hours a course. So that's when we came back to Mike and talking to him about taking his regular course content coverage and separating it into four separate courses. Together we call it the course suite.
All right, so this is the third in the four-course suite that we're going to make up. And if you've been into Cardian courses before, you know the structure of the course, you know what some of these things are, you probably go into the scenario and start reading the scenario. Because all of these courses have a scenario. And the scenario is sort of like, I don't know, it's the trailer for the movie. It tells you what you're going to do. So let's go in.
So again, the idea is there's a scenario, and then these tasks are strategies to help solve the problem that's presented.
So in this scenario, you're a junior accountant for Surftex, a PC manufacturer. You hit on this. It's planning an aggressive launch of new product lines in the coming months. As part of that effort, Surftex is considering a strategic alliance with this other company. Red Desert manufactures dependable and inexpensive motherboards for the personal computers. And all right, so they're flashy, fast, inexpensive. But you got new mail. But you're going to get to it later. Why? Because your boss walks in. Cheryl Thompson walks in. All right. we're going to form a partnership with Bread Industries. Your job, what are you going to do? Going to be highly dependent on Red Desert. So, I want to be sure it's financially stable. Okay? Basically, I want to make sure about what they're producing and what we're reading about. So, go find out their financial, take a look at their financial information, see what you can find out. This is basically what you get. Right? It's sort of like what I said earlier about during the desert and your car breaks down. Now, it's up to you to try and figure out what you want to do. This sounds a lot also like the BAM stuff that Tony was talking about earlier. All right, so where do you go? Most of the time what you do is you go back to the task and start looking at the task. So let's go back to one of the tasks.
It's like the exit.
Pilot error.
Pilot error.
All right, what we did is we loaded this up into a CD to bring it here because we weren't sure we had the internet access. This is basically all going to be accessible through the internet, and that's the way we're going to get into it. All right, let's go to task one. Is that the one we wanted to do?
Yep.
All right, let's go to task one. Task one, review mini scratch case. I was talking earlier. Miniscribe, we've been working on, since I've been at Columbia, Miniscribe's been around. But what we do here is, we tell them to review the Miniscribe case, and then we ask for deliverables. Deliverables will be the key thing that students are going to have to produce in order to not only learn the stuff, but be assessed for how they learn. So you do a two-page report, and that, you email to the instructor, and the instructor will give you feedback, committed to a timely response. You got suggested strategies, you got things that they talk about that you should study.
What size class are they envisioning for you?
Great. This is something we forgot to talk about earlier. Basically, tell me if I'm wrong. Actually, Steve knows it's even better.
You're planning to deliver this 1,000, so I was just wondering.
Yeah. You see, no, the idea is that each instructor will have about 50 students. But here's the key, and this goes back to something Chuck said earlier. Remember when he talked about discretionary pace? One of the things these guys are going to try and do is they're going to have a class of 50 students, all of which are at basically different levels in the course. As they complete a course, they rotate it out, and they get new students in. So they're going to have very different kinds of communication going on. You know, and me, when I think about this, I don't know how this is going to work. It's actually going to be very fascinating to see whether these guys can pull it off or not.
We've done a number of internal experiments, because remember the non-linearity and the asynchronous aspect of this. So some students will come in, go completely through these tasks and be asking the instructor, who's in the background here, all along. So I mentioned earlier this dashboard. You know, a program that keeps track of where the student has been. That becomes more and more important as you realize that one student has actually done task 1, 2, and 3 and is now asking a question from task 4. While there's another student who may not have done anything and they're just flipping through the course and are asking a question from task 4. So the idea is to have a program that keeps track of where the students are at, and that will help the instructor provide feedback. One design issue that we looked at is, in terms of online time versus outside reading and textbook and thinking and things like that, we're shooting for something on the order of about 20 to 25% of the students' time where they're actually doing things here on the computer. Either guided problems or going through, say, the scenario or these tasks. And the rest of the time, you know, notice when we look here, we see some relevant resources, Wall Street Journal article, blah, 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 blah. Those take time to read, and then they might jump on and jump into a discussion thread about those articles. They might ask the instructor, what do I do with this article? And provide some feedback that way. So about 20-25% of the time on the computer. And then in terms of discussion on the discussion thread, within a week or so, you have a situation where one student is way ahead of another student, but they're still talking to one another, okay? And that turns out to be a pretty interesting learning experience for both parties. The student who hasn't yet started is, in fact, started in the class. They're learning from another student, okay? The student who has done this on their own and is now trying to explain this to a student who's just starting is reinforcing what they learned. When you think about what you want as an instructor, you'd want to be sitting out there watching this because you want to make sure that they stay in bounds in terms of the integrity of the course. So again, if you look at the instructor as someone who's watching, they may step in and make some comments to make sure that everything's credible and the comments coming back and forth are just correct.
And I see that in your course pack, do you have to have a paper course pack for this kind of course?
Yes, I do. So when a student signs up for this course, there's a virtual bookstore. They go there, they click yes, they're going to get, in this particular course, they're going to get a copy of a course pack very similar to what we have in many of your classes, maybe these photocopy articles.
They just download that, right?
And some of that they can download, but there's an actual virtual bookstore that they can have it sent to them, as well as the textbook. The textbook's used as background material throughout all four of these courses.
Yeah, so you get assigned certain problems out of the textbook sometimes too. All right, let's go articulation. So you might go into the articulation of financial statements. You can click there, you can click over on the side. These are the resource modules. We want to go into one of these just to show you how some of this works. So, now this loads up. Ah, there we go.
Sheet shows the status of a company's accounts at the point in time, the end of the accounting period. The details of how the more important accounts change from one period to the next are found in other financial statements, such as the statement of shareholders' equity, the statement of cash flows, and the income statement.
All right, so we go through, and basically we talk about articulation here, the articulation of financial statements, take it through here. Sure.
The cash flow statement provides information about cash inflows and outflows during the accounting period. Cash is an asset account on the balance sheet. The cash balances shown on the balance sheet match the beginning and ending balances shown on the statement of cash flows.
Okay. Why don't we take it into the articulation of accounts. And then we basically have a couple things here. We have animations like this that just kind of run through. We also have interactions. Notice on something like this, you got to click on it. Going, but also something we're going to show you. Let's show this once.
We can use the accounting box to show how different economic events or transactions can affect a company's accounts.
In
the first transaction, CPD Systems had sales of $20 million, all on credit. Remember that entries in the accounting box are in units of 1,000.
Remember on this stuff that we're talking about people who are not going to be accountants, by and large. So mostly what we want to do is we want to make sure that these guys understand what's going on. So, hit it again.
The firm collected $18 million from its customers.
Yep.
Sales provide revenue for the firm. This is an increase in retained earnings.
So there's certain things...
Sales are on credit, which increases accounts receivable.
There's certain things that we wanted to make sure that we got in here, certain kind of actual things. One of them is that when I was teaching the class, I had a lot of humanities majors come through. And it turns out, it blew me away when I was told this, but it turns out that some of them are really taken aback by numbers. And they understand. So that I put a word in the box and talk about revenues or collections, they help, it helps them understand. So this version, we got the numbers, and then we got the words. Even better, in the next version, ongoing versions, we're going to have pictures flying through here. And it's kind of funny, but pictures actually work for some people, where numbers don't. So we're trying to do that, and this may not, this is like when I was seeing the BAM stuff earlier, the BAM stuff really emphasizes the bookkeeping kind of entry, and this stuff that up here really emphasizes a viewpoint, I mean a reading, the financial statements kind of entry. What else?
It's interesting in that when we show this to some professors, they'll come into UNIX and they'll say, show us your technology. Okay? And like this morning I heard the comment, kind of Hollywood. These are the kind of multimedia pieces we're trying to develop. They're not particularly fake in one sense, but they're well grounded in terms of what we're trying to convey to the student. And they will sit there and play this thing over and over again, and literally within a half an hour, understand a lot of accounting. Okay, because they'll sit there, they'll find this, they'll play with it, and then maybe they'll go read some stuff. One aspect to what we're trying to do is, when we have test students come in, we follow exactly what they're doing and why. And a general path for many students take is just play this thing several times, and they haven't read a thing. Okay. But they understand the equality and this relationship between the numbers and the words, and then they'll go back and read. When they're going back to read, they're actually doing it with some background. It's interesting to watch.
How much does a student pay for one of these? For the numbers?
Well, the
company paying for it, right?
UNIX is not yet in the business of signing up an individual student. What we're doing is going to corporations and selling large blocks of these courses. It's one of the reasons why UNIX is following a strategy of breadth, that they want a lot of courses built by the end of the year. So IBM, for example, has been very interested in this project from the beginning. I was talking to somebody about Motorola. They're very interested in this. If you think about their business problem, it's a very simple one. Motorola is in Chicago. They send about 100 students through either the Northwestern or Chicago MBA programs at a very high ticket price. They can't send more because they can't afford to. Chicago can't, and Northwestern can't afford to expand enough to train them. And yet they have like 10,000 engineers sitting out there in Schaumburg. So they're very interested in signing a large contract for this, as well as a whole series of other courses that they'll make available to many of their employees. And so the price at that point is quite a bit less in Motorola's eyes than an actual MBA Chicago. As we've talked about, there are many differences, and it's hard to really compare the two. Look at comments that UNIX has made right from the beginning. They would say, if you're privileged enough to go to Chicago and get an MBA, go do it.
Just a quick question about your program. Is it HTML for this or JavaScript?
There's no Java in this.
The JavaScript.
But we have another JavaScript.
Is it
not
MacroMedia?
Yeah, these are Flash and MacroMedia.
I mean, we got other stuff too. Like, we got a transaction calculator that basically helps you create financial statements off Excel spreadsheet, and we got videos running through here and stuff. But you guys get the gist of it. Basically, you get the multimedia pieces that are integrated with the reading modules. But like Steve says, a lot of the multimedia tries to teach as you go through it. I don't know.
Well, we have to. Can I hit this?
Sure, go ahead.
Hirschenheider video 52.
So basically, this, what we do with the videos is we take anywhere from like 20 seconds to say no more than say a minute and a half video that emphasizes different points that we make all the way through here. And we got a lot of these little video clips. And these guys were amazing. They asked me questions and they made me look semi-intelligent when they cut and edited the tape. But basically, it's not like the streaming videos. It's not like the videos where you video a class. It's real kind of short, keep the attention span kind of stuff. Then we have a couple other things that we're working on, like I said, the transaction calculator. But that's the gist of the package.
And the student experience in this course is when they've learned about, they've seen the scenario about Red Desert, and they go forward and analyze Red Desert's financial statements, and then they need to go talk to an accountant about something that looks odd. And that's where we actually introduce you to debits and credits. So you have to communicate with the accountant, and the accountant is talking in terms of debits and credits. So the student, this is the third class in the course suite. So they're, you know, somewhere between 50 and 75 hours into their course, their total accounting course, before they actually see these debits and credits, and then they're learning it simply as a language. And many of these words are, there's a glossary in here, many of these words are defined.
Nothing you might consider telling students to install GuruNet. It's free. And GuruNet lets you point to any word in the Internet Explorer, and it comes up with definitions.
That's a good idea.
It's free software for Israel.
So, anything else?
You bring it.
I didn't have a T1 connection. I just had a modem.
The question is, if you just had a modem, you didn't have a T1 line, what would happen as far as this goes? You know, these are good questions. I'm a content designer. I have no idea about technology.
Doesn't everyone have cable modem?
And one of the reasons, for example, that the video clips are very short is two reasons. One, they're designed to provide a little wisdom on the side, but also because of this download issue. The course itself will actually download as you go through it, so it's just streaming in. So it works fairly well even at 28.8. And then some of the design in here, like this illustration, you know, is presented in this way, just so it'll download fast. Okay, so there's an aspect behind it. And then you saw I think, like with the video, you get to choose at what speed to download it. Okay, you can minimize it while it's downloading and bring it up.
Yeah, just to go back, you said you can go online 25 seconds. That would be...
Well, if you figure this whole class would take students from start to finish about this particular course about 25 hours. So they'll spend 5 hours, 6 hours online. And you know, much of that time is you know, going through the scenario and the tasks, and underneath the tasks are the research modules which are designed to help them. We haven't talked much about guided problems and self-assessment, but many students will say, okay, I need to go solve this problem, and here's some guided solutions, and they'll go through a number of those. Now they can quit whenever they want, they don't have to do them. Okay? They may rely on an instructor instead, or they may go to the textbook. Anything else?
Could I ask all of you to fill out the student teacher evaluations? And might you just leave them here about assignments and different ways to do
it? Thanks very much. It's
Steve, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.